What? Yeah. I'm behaving myself. I'm not playing in abandoned buildings. What? Again? Now, I suppose you had those people follow me again. Fine. Hey, this is Jimmy Farrow from Monty and the Farrow, and I want to thank all our subscribers. We have now passed 14,000 on our YouTube channel. But I want to ask our subscribers to take the next step for us and become a full-fledged member of Monty and the Farrow. Yeah, that's right, folks. There's three different levels to choose from. There's free shirts. There's free autographs. Just check it out and become a member of Long Island's number one pro wrestling broadcast, Monty and the Farrow. Later.
Welcome back to Long Island's number one pro wrestling broadcast, Monty and the Farrow, seen only here out of Indie Music TV. Jared at the board on a Friday night.
Hello, how are we doing?
What does a young guy like you want to do on a Friday night at 9 o'clock?
Not producing a
wrestling show, I bet,
right? I was just going to say, nowhere else I'd rather be.
Nowhere else he'd rather be. There you go. Well, wow, that's pretty amazing.
The youth has spoken.
I think you won him over.
I did?
Yeah.
I heard he likes you. He's also a huge fan of our guest, too. So, you know. Good job, Jared. Good job.
All right. Well, we want to get to our special guest because this is, again, an iconic moment. But I want to cover a few things before we get to him.
Why do I always get worried when you do this?
FBI reportedly found top secret documents at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort. Washington Post broke the story last night that documents pertaining to nuclear weapons were among those the FBI investigators found. What do you think?
Did he use them? Did he use any nuclear weapons, President Trump?
My question is...
Who cares?
When is it
going to... What is this?
When's it going to stop?
It's never
going to
stop. When he's dead and buried, they're going to investigate his coffin.
When's he going to announce his presidency for 2000?
Any day now. I don't know. I would assume soon.
I hope soon, right?
Dude, wait a minute. Do you really want that all over again with the anarchy?
Yes, I do.
Wow. Okay.
Why? You want these gas prices?
No, I don't. And I don't
want
to pay.
No,
I do not. No.
There you go.
All right. Let me know when he decides.
On a lighter note, Anne Heche suffered severe brain injury and is not expected to survive.
Oh, my God.
Bad, bad, bad.
Anne Heche's ref told People magazine in a statement that the actress suffered major brain injuries and
catastrophic.
Will not survive.
Well, I did see the video of, I think there was a house right before she smashed that showed how fast she was going, and I'm like, wow, holy...
She was crazy, dude. Did you watch that whole thing?
No, I did not.
Supposedly she was on a podcast, and was drinking, and then it got out of control.
Wow.
And this is how this whole...
Dude, it's terribly tragic, but my Lord, what was she doing?
We're going to have to ask Greg about that.
Yeah. That's just, she was going like
to the right is the star
ship.
Of the show, Mr. Jimmy Farrow. Jimmy, along with his partner, Bart Griggs, make up the band Wisteria Hall. Wisteria Hall sings such great songs as In My Dreams, This Life, Not Far Behind. You can get Wisteria Hall's music on the Wisteria Hall YouTube page. Hit like and subscribe, Spotify, Apple Music, and Reverb Nation. If you didn't know it, you are watching Long Island's number one pro wrestling broadcast, Monty and the Farrow, where over 2 million views have been seen of this show. Catch us on the Monty and the Farrow YouTube page and Monty and the Farrow Facebook Live page. Hear us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Anchor, Twitch TV. And if you're lucky enough to live in New York, catch us on Channel 115 every Tuesday at 9:30 and Saturday at 11:30, where we go head-to-head with Saturday Night Live, where we're seen weekly by over 100,000 viewers, and also Channel 20 at Tuesday at 1 a.m. So I get through the shtick because we want to get to probably one of the most iconic pro wrestlers in the history of pro wrestling, Mr. Greg Valentine.
We will see you in a second.
You need a body shop? You need engine repair? Auto Excellence, Collision Specialists, 631-261-6420. That's 631-261-6420. Auto Excellence.
And APB, American Protection Bureau, voted number one best on Long Island for all your security needs. Call 631-390-9050. That's 631-390-9050. APB.
Hey folks, this is Wolfie D here, and if you are looking to buy or sell a home in Tennessee or Southern Kentucky, you're going to want to call my buddy, the rock star realtor, Benji Bowie. And you say, Wolfie, how do I get in touch with this rock star? Well, you can call him directly at 615-390-8216. You can go to his website, BowieHomes.com, that's B-U-I-E, Homes.com, or you can email him at BenBowie34@gmail.com. BenBuie34@gmail.com. When you need a home, you need the Rockstar Realtor.
Tell him Wolfie sent you. Benji is a member of Exit Realty's Garden Gate team in Gallatin, Tennessee.
All right, welcome back to Long Island's number one pro wrestle broadcast, Monty Nefaro, where we welcome Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Thank you.
Sir, we have to thank you. You gave us our start. You were our first real guest on our show when we first started off in that much smaller studio.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yes.
Yep.
And we had Mexican.
Well, I dressed up for the occasion.
I know. You're looking good. You got the jacket on. You got the sunglasses
on. First time I looked like I just got off the beach in Florida with the shorts and everything.
So, what do you think about this whole thing with Trump?
Oh, so I love Trump and... you know, I've never voted before. I didn't want to stand in line and vote, you know, and I wasn't into politics. But I voted for Trump whenever the election that they stole, 2020, was it?
Mm-hmm.
I stood in line, and actually stood in line for 2 hours to vote, and my wife, Julie. And so it really affected me when they stole the election, and I know they did. Huh. And... in Nevada, I know they stole it in Nevada, but it was so close. It was nip and tuck all the way in Nevada. So many places, Arizona. They finally found out, you know, they found all the votes for Arizona. So he won Arizona, and you know he won Pennsylvania and Georgia. He won it all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the mail-in thing kind of.
It's really.
What?
You know, I'm really into politics now, and I'm older now, and I'm really, really into, and it all started with Trump becoming the president.
Interesting.
And so I really follow everything, and I see what the Democrats are trying to ruin the country. Not trying, they are ruining it right now.
Hard to argue.
The gas prices and the food shortages, and you just keep saying, and you've got Joe Biden that's got no friggin' brain. You know, I hate it, you know.
Any personal memories of coming across Donald Trump, perhaps?
Yeah. Actually, remember, we went to the Trump Plaza.
There we go.
And this is the first time now, you know, I couldn't stand Donald Trump because of that show, You're Fired. You know? I hated him, and I was also jealous because he had all that money.
Uh-huh.
And now him and Vince McMahon are rubbing elbows and they're running Trump Plaza. And I went over there and shook his hand and walked away, and he came up to me when I was just standing there kind of looking at him, and he came up to me and he goes, I just want to say you're one of the best wrestlers I've ever seen.
Smart
I
guy.
Said, well, thank you.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
not just because he said that, but, it, you know, it was, oh, you know, he's really a good guy. And
there you go.
I love him. Yeah. I love him.
You just mentioned Vince McMahon. You probably know about all the allegations and the payments and things like that.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that whole situation?
Oh, God. I feel, you know, it's just any kind of thing like that is such a bad situation to be in. And I don't, to be honest with you, I don't know what to think about it. I really don't. I don't know what to think about it. And
Well, you had a close relationship with Vince at some point in your career.
Was he
that precocious? Is that a good word to use?
Flirtatious? Did you ever see any signs that, you know, the guy was making out like a rock star?
Yeah. No, he was pretty coy about doing that, you know. I knew him really well back before his dad passed away and then Vince took over. And then once Vince took over, and he had to do this, he separated himself from the boys. But we used to ride together and laugh, and we were friends. So, you know, it's just, I don't know what to say about it. I don't want to say anything, really. I just feel bad that I feel bad for him. I guess I feel bad for the girl, too. You know, it's hard to say.
You feel the company's in good hands, though, now, with Stephanie and Triple H? You feel confident in the future of the WWE?
Yeah. I think they're fine. Stephanie's smart. She's a chip off the old block. And Linda McMahon's she'll be in there. And I can see Vince, you know. He's going to be back there in the back, still pulling the reins.
So you still think Vince is around somehow?
Yeah, he'd be like, that's great. He'll be like Obama helping Joe Biden now.
There you go.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah. How does that make you feel, though, that you're one of the pillars that created, like, I don't think anyone could imagine it would become this billion-dollar corporation it is now, but you are one of the major pillars that built this organization. How does that make you feel?
Yeah, so I came in here in 1979, and before all that WrestleMania stuff, and it was great then. They were doing great business then, and they were starting to go to the West Coast and everywhere, and Vince was buying TV everywhere. And so I was at the beginning of that before WrestleMania 1, and when that came out, you know, then bang, you know. But I knew what was going on in the office a lot, and George Scott, who gave me my first break in Charlotte, came up and actually became the booker also right around the same time. He's the one that actually set me up in 1979. He brought me in, and I'm in Charlotte. I'm Flair's partner. I'm doing great. And he goes, we're going to send you to New York. New York? I don't want to leave here. And New York was scary to me, but you know, it was really good. And Vince McMahon Sr. was such a class act. And he grabbed me and he says, we're going to give you a hold. It's called a figure four leg lock. I didn't know what the hell it was. And this is Sr. I'm talking about. And he had me breaking everybody's leg. And I mean, talking about, he knew how to get somebody in the, for lack of better word, over. Or famous, over in wrestling jargon is mean you're over. You know, you can draw money now. Everybody believes in you. Figure four, and he knew how to do that. So
strange question. The move, as you just revealed, was, you know, basically given to you with the idea coming through Vince Sr., right?
Right.
Does the move go with you to the next territory without saying, hey, Vince, is it? I'm still going to use this. It seems to be really good. Did you have to? Is there any?
Well, like, you know, no, because back then there was, they didn't care. You know, he says, I'm going to send you back to Charlotte or wherever you want to go, mm-hmm. and then I want you back in a year. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what he told me. So that made me feel good. So when I went to Charlotte, I used the backward suplex, and I used
the elbow.
The brain buster, the elbow. Yeah. And I started using the figure four down there, and they said, hey, wait a minute, Ric Flair uses that figure four. So for a while, I didn't use it. And then George Gock, George was a booker still then. He says, go ahead and use that figure four. Flair's the world champion. He's gone, you know, he's not even around here. So yeah, so I kept it. It became my signature hold no matter where I went.
How were your emotions? So you're in New York, you're making pretty solid money, I'm assuming. And now he's like, okay, time to go. We'll call you back in a year. Are you like, shit, I'm going to lose all this money going to Charlotte? Are you like, oh, Charlotte's hot too. I'm going to make crazy money down there.
No, because I had just left. I was doing really, really good on the NWA Charlotte. And I didn't want to leave and come to New York. They brought me into New York because New York, they weren't drawing shit up here. What they needed was guys that could wrestle. I don't know I'm not going to knock the guys that they had here, but they were poking fingers in the eye, and they were ball shots. I mean, all the shortcuts in wrestling, not making it look real, not making it look like a contest. And so Senior knew he had to change something. So I think the guy that came in before me, Kim Patera, was what they were looking for wrestling-wise. Then I came in with a wrestling hold, did the hour Broadway with Backlund right away. People would come up to me and say they'd never seen anything like that, two guys wrestling for an hour long, you know, to a finish. Nobody won, but they'd never seen that in New York. So he was building, Senior was building, trying to get it back to reality, realistic wrestling, something a fan could bite their teeth in and say, I know that's not fake. That's got to be real. Look at that. And back then, you know, me and Tito used to hit each other hard. I mean, you know, it's just certain guys that didn't want to work with me because I hit them hard, but I didn't hit them in the face. I wanted everything to be believable. I grew up watching Johnny Valentine, my dad, who was the stiffest son of a bitch ever. But he made the people believe. You're not trying to convince your opponent it's for real,
right.
But you want everybody to believe it. And that's the way I got over, and that's the way I got over here. And the people still talk about the 80s and the 90s or whatever, because, and the 70s, because, you know, it was competition. It looked like the real thing. The only, you know, we knew a lot of, you know, I didn't plan my matches. I went out. I didn't want to talk about my matches. I went out. I knew what the ending was going to be, whether I was going to lose or I was going over. I like to just play it by ear, when I first came in here, I've been working 10 years. So if you don't know how to work by 10 years, you should go find another job. And it was all feeling, and that's the only way to make the people believe it's for real, is if you're just going off the cuff and making it. And it's got to be your opponent, too. Backlund was a little hard at first, but after he got tired, he was easy to work with. Tito was a dream when they stuck me with him. And any of the other guys I worked with, it was...
Do you consider
Jay
that...
Strongbow, I could have fantastic matches mm-hmm. with him. Mm-hmm.
Do you consider the Tito feud your greatest feud ever?
It was the longest one. I would put it... Yeah, I would have to say yes.
About 2 years, that program?
It lasted actually for 3 years.
3 years?
Yeah.
Jeez. So he
was such a beautiful guy.
He tells a story, though, that you purposely destroyed the belt so he couldn't have it, and it was a shoot. Is that accurate? And by the way, the belt's here. We found it in Tito's garbage. But
yeah.
Oh, he might. But we took it. That looks like it.
Yeah, we repaired it, too.
They might have told him that, but they came up to me and told me to destroy the belt after I lose the match. And so I destroyed it, and they said they're gonna get him a new title, right? And it was a good thing for me because I lost the belt, so now I'm like a baby throwing a temper tantrum and beat the hell out of it. And then I leave, and then Tito sold it beautifully. He came in and he grabbed it and he looked at it and he held it like it was a little baby, you know, and like he's crying and he's you know, it was beautiful.
It was.
Now, did you
Did you ask him for the belt afterwards to take it home? Like, who ended up with that destroyed belt?
He put it in his bag and left with it, and I think they knew he was going to get a new belt, but that belt, you know, that'd be so great to have.
Man, those old school belts were like...
I should have kept it.
Oh, my God.
Any thoughts on Ric Flair's recent last match?
Yeah, I didn't watch it. And it kept popping up. I get YouTube everywhere in my house. It pops up on my cable, my big screen. And I never did really. I started to watch it. I saw Jeff Jarrett look pretty good. Rick had his shirt on. I go, I ain't going to watch it. He's got his shirt on.
Mm.
You know, and I hate that. If you're so old, you can't wrestle, and you got to wear a shirt. you know, and I heard he got tired. I just didn't want to watch it. Now, you want to have a good match, put me against Flair. And I challenge him right now. Don't wear the T-shirt. I won't wear one. Let's go out there and fucking nail each other.
That would be.
Oh, my God.
I challenge him right now.
Now, well, let me ask you this. Were you a greater... But we were talking about last night's show, the greatest of all time. It was Hulk Hogan's birthday yesterday. And
was it really?
Yes.
Okay.
Would you consider yourself better than Ric Flair as one of the all-time greats?
I'm better than Hogan and Flair.
Nice.
Yeah.
Tell us why. Why do you feel that way?
Well, Ric Flair's matches were all the same. And I used to put thoughts into my matches and try to mix it up, you know. And sometimes we get repeat. There's only so many different things you can do. But, you know, how many times you're going to watch him go hit the rope and turn around, jump, go over the top, run down, come on, drop the elbow. How many times you can see it? That's every friggin' match he has. I like Rick, but, I mean, I'm shooting from the hip.
Yeah.
I'm saying his matches are all alike. Mine, I couldn't take the bumps like Rick, but I don't think bumps are that realistic. Anyway, I tried to make my matches different. As far as Hogan, he just had the ultimate push. Nice guy, had great interviews, big friggin' arms. He was just right for that time in the era. But as far as work and realistic and drawing money, I sold Madison Square Garden out 17 times, and I know that for a fact. And I think it's because of my believability. And Hogan had the major push, and he had his own deal, made lots of money, and
let me ask you about that. He got the major push, but could anyone, in your opinion, could anyone else have carried the WWE to? Because, you know, Hogan's the spark that created the WWE today.
The WrestleMania.
Obviously, right, the opponents, things like that. Could anyone else have done that besides Hogan? Could McMahon have used somebody else?
Well, I could have been the world champion, but I wouldn't want it. Because I'm a heel, the bad guy, I wouldn't want to keep it. So he was perfect for that. But the reason I say I was better than him is I was just a better worker.
Yeah.
But I... Me and Tito used to go out. I mean, they had three towns a night running in the 80s, in the 90s. And me and Tito could go main event in Detroit and go to Boston that same day and sell them out, sell both Boston and Detroit out with just the Intercontinental belt. We didn't need Hogan on the card. We didn't need anybody on the card. We could do it ourselves. I mean, you got to have an undercard, but... Hogan, that was a big feather in our cap for drawing. And I can't draw nothing by myself. I have to have a good opponent like Tito. He was fabulous.
So what you're trying to say is the other wrestlers probably happy being on the B card with you guys because the draw was the same as a Hogan card.
So I was a B card, but we still sold out and we made money. And I'll listen, Greg and Tito over there, don't worry about it. We'll have Hogan go over here. And then I think there was even three cards on the weekends, and they probably still – wrestling was just hot back then. But we could – the Intercontinental Champion could – I myself could sell out without Hogan on the card.
Key word being worker. You've mentioned it a couple of times. Who to Greg Valentine is the greatest worker in the history of pro wrestling?
What's that?
Who's the greatest worker in the history of pro wrestling to you?
Besides myself.
There you go. Well, we got the obvious. I mean, who's second to you?
No, there's guys with different styles, you know. And I guess like Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Interesting.
You know, he did a phenomenal job in getting over. And The Rock. Rock had a lot of charisma, plus he knew how to work. I mean, there's a lot of other guys that could work good, you know. That's just off the top of my head.
Right.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on guys?
I don't watch the current product.
Okay.
I can't really, I don't want to say anything bad about it, but I'm just past that. I I watch WrestleMania, and that's about it.
Oh, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
ESO Creative, one of the fans out there, wants to know, any memories on the Poughkeepsie Civic Center?
Yeah, it was really hot down in the basement. But we used to do all of our television. After we left Allentown, we went to Poughkeepsie. Allentown was better, and so was even Hamburg. But he wanted to go to Poughkeepsie, and we'd be in that hot dressing room in the basement. But it was kind of, you know, at least they had air up there. My thoughts were that was a good time. That's where me and Brutus got beat by the Bulldogs. See, they didn't have anybody for us to wrestle, and we were the champs, right? So because Barry Windham and walked out. It was mainly Windham that walked out, and Rotundo had no place to go, so he followed him. Came back with Dan Spivey. That didn't work. So they're looking at, here's the British Bulldogs. They're underneath. So we went out there, put them over on national TV with Captain Lou Albano, my ex-manager, and it made them. They beat us in a non-title match. And that's how I remember Poughkeepsie, because of that. And we went over and sold. Speaking of selling out by ourselves without Hogan, Beefcake and Valentine could go anywhere against the Bulldogs. And no tag team had done this. And tag teams were just a supporting card, right? Mm-hmm. They'd be underneath, say, Hogan or whoever in the main event. We were the real main event and went everywhere and sold out against those Bulldogs.
In New York, that match closed out WrestleMania 2.
Right.
Very upsetting, by the way. Very, right. Very upset about
it. I was upset about it, too. And we were supposed to get the belts back, but it didn't happen, you know.
Why not?
Was Dynamite?
I remember going to the office and complaining, when are we getting the belts back?
Yeah.
And Vince goes, oh, we're going to do a round robin. Oh, by the way, I got a check here for $125,000. Dollars made out to you, your first doll check, your action figure check. So I'm looking at that, and then I don't need the belts. Yeah, I got this. Yeah. So I'm going to go buy me a new car.
was Dynamite Kid as much as a prick as everybody says he was? Or?
Not to me, but he was a prick.
Well, I wouldn't expect him to be to you.
Were you there with that whole thing with the Rougeaus? Like, what do you know about that whole situation?
Okay, so here... I was in Miami, and I think we weren't working with the Bulldogs there that night. I think it was some big deal, like a Royal Rumble out of Miami, and or maybe it wasn't. But anyway, I'll tell you what happened in the dressing room. Rougeau's sitting there unlacing his shoes, and the little guy.
Dynamite.
Not Davey Boy, but Dynamite comes in. I'm sitting right there next to Rougeau. He comes in and he slaps Jock twice right across the face. You piece of shit. You fucked up the whole match. You son of a bitch. Get up and fight right now. And Jock just sat there like this, you know. And I probably would have done the same thing. Like, wait a minute. Let me go, you know. Well, if someone hit me like that, I would have hit him back. But, I mean, he was, like, stunned. And I'm watching this, I go, what the fuck, you know? And so about a month later, or maybe it wasn't that long, maybe it's 2 weeks later when we're doing a TV somewhere, and we're in the lunchroom and we're all coming out, and I'm one of the last guys in there, and all of a sudden I hear this, bam! And Rougeau was waiting for Dynamite Kid to come out and punched him, and everybody said he had a bunch of coins in his hands or something to make his fist real hard, punched him in the face and knocked about four teeth down his throat and took off and left. Now, about a week later, I'm flying over to Europe and they're going with me. I didn't think Dynamite was going to come. And he's just smiling. He had three teeth missing. And that was bad. That was bad shit. But I don't know if Rougeau, I know he said, you know, he attacked him and waiting around the corner because he had been embarrassed. I don't know if he had a roll of quarters there, but he gave him a hell of a shot and knocked three teeth out.
Isban of Royals asking, why did you choose to wear the mask in the 1993 Survivor Series?
Because they asked me to come up to Survivor Series, and they said, we want you to wear a mask. And I go, oh, you paying me? And I was thinking about the money, and who was it, Shawn Michaels, that I was?
Yeah, I think it was Shawn, right? It was the Knights or whatever, right?
Yeah, whatever it was. And I didn't like the feeling of the whole thing. But I came for the payday, so don't worry about it.
You mentioned you were tight with Junior before he got the company from his father.
Right.
Was it stressful for you, your friendship with Junior, as you know he became the big shot and took over, and now you're not getting the.
It was stressful because he didn't say hi to anybody and he just walked on through, you know. And it used to be, Captain. We used to have these big dinners after Allentown, and everybody would be invited. Not everybody, but I was there. Graham Wizard was there. Sergeant Slaughter was always there. Gorilla Monsoon was there. And a couple other guys, give or take a few. And we'd all have that big dinner, and Vince Sr. Would be at the head of the table, and Junior would be right here, you know. And Captain Lou, about halfway through, would get really fucking drunk and he'd start fucking laying it in on Vince Jr. I'll tell you what, you guys better watch out, because if anything happens to that old man, that fucking punk kid is gonna take over, and if you fall down in front of him, he's gonna walk right over the top of you. In other words, he hasn't got the heart that the old man, but I don't want to say that, you know. He's still a chip off the old block. It's a different thing. Maybe Vince had to separate it, you know, because he was taken over. But he didn't have the heart that the old man had. Vince Sr. used to come up to me and he goes, you know, when I had to, remember the name Stan Stasiak?
Sure, of course.
He said he'd been here forever and I had to let him go. And he goes, I couldn't do it. I couldn't fire the guy, but I finally had to do it. He's telling me this story out of the blue. And he was such a good guy. And, you know, maybe Vince is a chip off the old block. I'm sure he's got a good heart too, but he would just have, he'd send Pat Patterson out to tell you you're fired or something. But, yeah, so, but I know.
How did Pat handle all that, though? That had to be tough on Pat too, right?
What's up?
Like, so
letting people go,
being the mouthpiece, all the time, was that difficult for
Pat? Can't be easy.
Yeah. Okay. So, but I think in later years they just send you a letter and say you're fired.
Just give you the old FedEx
on your wedding day.
Yeah, on your wedding day.
Yeah, like CM Punk.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We all know that AEW is coming around, and you know, again, you against Roddy Piper, dog collar match. Everybody knows that, and from being in. Up here,
right.
You know, we would read it through the, you know,
PWI.
The magazines, all that stuff. Right. We're like, holy cow, look at this. But I'm just asking your honest opinion. I'm sitting there watching you, and they're announcing this match, and you're sitting in the chair.
For AEW?
You're kind of waving to the crowd, yeah. Right. And I'm thinking to myself, do you really want to see them try to replicate the iconic match like
you think
that?
They
mean, what was going through your head?
Did they do you justice in your mind?
Okay, so I'm watching it and trying to analyze it, and I know they keep having the cameras hitting me, you know, and stuff, and I'm trying to sell it, you know, while I'm watching it. I thought they did an admirable job. Is that a good word?
Mm-hmm.
But you can't duplicate what me and Piper did. Come on, you can't do that. I don't know. Did they bleed or anything? I can't even remember. But I don't think the chain was a big, heavy chain like we had. But I was there, and I thought they did a good job, and it's a shame that guy died not too long, Brody Lee, after that.
Mm-hmm.
And Cody Rhodes, you know, he's a chip off the old block too. So I thought it was, you know, I would give it a B+. But as far as compared to me and Piper, no.
Was that your greatest match of all time in your mind, or is there something else?
Actually, the matches that me and Piper had leading up to that in different spots around the Carolinas, you can catch them on YouTube every now and then. I thought they were better. I mean, they were some jam-up jelly-type matches. But when you got a chain in there, it's hard to work with that thing. But I think we did a great job with it. I guess as far as brutality and iconicness, that would be the greatest match that either one of us had been in, other than him being on top in WrestleMania 1. And then, I think me and Brutus had some fantastic matches against the Bulldogs, but not WrestleMania 2, maybe some Saturday night's main events. And,
it's funny you brought that up. I was just thinking about that because I thought you guys were going to win the belts back that night because I think it was a 2 out of 3 falls, and you took the first fall. I'm like, oh, thank God they're going to win the belt back. So back to Piper real quick. You know, today's wrestler, you're a huge guy. You are a wrestler. Today's wrestler, 150 pounds, 160 pounds, whatever the case is.
Now I'm a huge guy. This is a problem.
Now Piper wasn't a really big guy, I'm assuming, right? How was Piper able to present himself that you felt he could take on Andre the Giant and beat Andre the Giant? What was it about Piper?
He was believable. Why?
Well, yeah, because he, you know, learning how to work, you learn that when you get in the ring, because I wasn't the biggest guy either. You just learn how to project yourself. And Piper had that, you know, that sneer and that look and believability. And he was a Golden Glove boxer. So he was really a tough guy, but he was only about 200, 225, 230 pounds soaking wet, maybe 235, you know, he pumped up, but he wasn't a big guy, but he had good looking punches because of the Golden Glove. He came up the hard way. He came up in LA like I did, and he came up the Mid-Atlantic. The Mid-Atlantic, he really got his shit together and learned how to mix his boxing with his wrestling. I always kind of like tried to mix my, do the rope-a-dope thing like Muhammad Ali and tried to mix boxing with wrestling because it gets, you know, you take the shots and just wrestling period is boring after a while, laying down a hold. But you get the guy down a hold, make the people come back, then you go back to fists of cups again, you know. So I think Piper was, you know, was a great worker.
You've had some really awesome tag team partners over the years, but can I ask you a little bit about what I feel like on paper, this might be the greatest team of all time, and it seemed to be like a rocket ship that you passed by. Ric Flair and Greg Valentine. Memories of that very special tag team, in my mind.
The only thing that I didn't like about being Flair's partner is sometimes he would forget I'm on the corner waiting to be tagged in.
Really? Okay.
He would get into his match so much. Now, that's not a real knock. And then I went to him. I says, man, you need to tag me in more often. And so we got to do that. But he was so used to being out there maybe by himself, he'd forget I'm over there. What makes a tag team good is the tagging in and out. So a lot of times we had some great matches. I think, you know, that could have been a dream team too. But he went off on his own and became the world champion, and I came up here to New York. So I would have to say Beefcake was my best partner.
I agree. I agree with you.
You love them.
There you go. And number one, because you got to have a captain, and I was the captain, and Beefcake, he followed right along, but he learned so good. He looked so good. We both didn't have blonde hair. He had his own look, and I had my own look.
Right.
So the Dream Team, that was actually my name for it. And I think there was another Dream Team basketball or something.
Right.
Earlier Olympics. But I think we might have been the original Dream Team. And that was, I'm the one that thought that up. And they liked it, so they went with it.
Should have trademarked that.
Yeah.
What's Love going it. On here?
Yeah.
All right, so you wrestle Backlund, our Broadways, whatever else. What is the transition for Greg Valentine after he finally falls to Backlund?
He didn't fall. He won the belt.
Okay, well.
Yeah, he won the
second
belt.
Second time I came up.
October 19th.
Yes.
We did the double pin.
Yeah. Right.
So I was world champion.
That was, I'm always going to say this, dude.
Did you actually defend that at one point?
Did you?
I think in the Capitol Center, no?
No.
But there's pictures with you
holding
it.
I grabbed that belt, took a lot of pictures because I knew there – going to come and take it away from me.
I was so pissed.
They held the belt up for about 6 weeks until we came back.
In New York.
In New York, right.
That
was, so after the hour-long Broadway and then my first time, 79 and 80 up here, my first run with Backlund, then I broke Strombo's leg and actually did more money with Strombo than I did with Backlund.
Thank you for breaking his leg, by the way. Thank you. Yeah.
And he was beautiful. And that was his all his idea. They weren't going to do
nice.
That. He went to Vince, let Greg break my leg.
There you
so
go.
I made a lot of money with Chief. So the second round, I came back up here, I think it was 82, and I did worked with Backlund again, and we did that double pin. So then they held the belt up in Madison Square Garden. And so then we came back, and then I lost to him. But then I did the angle with Pedro Morales where I suplexed him on a cement floor.
Right. Yep.
And he sold it like a champ, and I hurt the hell out of my arm and did gangbusters with Pedro Morales. I thought maybe they're going to give me the belt with Pedro, but they never did. So I ended up going back to the Carolinas, but I'm glad I did. So I went back there and broke Wahoo's leg. And
you and Indians
didn't use the figure four on Wahoo because I couldn't get it on. I tried to put it on the dressing room.
Oh, his legs
he had those big legs for playing for the New York Jets and the Dolphins. He was a football player.
Yeah.
I couldn't get it on, so I just did this thing where I hooked his leg on the ankle and just fell back.
Mm.
And he sold it like a champ, and I broke Wahoo's leg. We started, made a ton of money with Wahoo, and I'm going to give. I feel like I'm a tough guy now, but I'm old. I'm old now. But he made me, in my heyday, he made me tough. I wasn't tough till I worked with Wahoo.
Mm.
He beat the crap out of me, hit me in the face, fucked me up so bad. Finally, I just got mad one day, and I found out, well, I'm a little tougher than I thought I was. I fucking hit him point blank in his face, and he went down on his knees. And then he came up to my wife and I, and we were in Bennigan's. Remember Bennigan's?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In Charlotte later that night. And he goes, I just want to tell you, your husband's one hell of a man. He walked off.
That's
And from that day on, I thought, well, I am a little bit tough. Only because he beat me tough. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does.
I wouldn't fight back before that. You know, I find it. Fuck it.
I have to ask you because... When you got your shot with Backlund the second time around in 82, and then you fought with Pedro, you were the center of my wrestling universe. You were my first real favorite wrestler, and you've remained my favorite heel 40 years later.
Thank you.
So I need to know, did you make any kind of like case for yourself behind the scenes, like when you were close to beating Backlund but didn't? Then they put you with Pedro. Maybe they'll give me this belt. You're close again. Did you argue with them at all behind the scenes and try to make more of a pitch for yourself? Because this kid in East Northport was going crazy, going, how is he not have a belt? What a nerd I am. I need to know. Did you fight for your own behalf to try to like get these belts around?
Okay, here's one thing where I'll put Flair over what I do. Flair got into the office, and he pissed himself. I... should have done that, but I didn't. I hated going to the office. The only time I can remember going to the office is when me and Beefcake went and bitched about getting our tag belts back. That's the only time I could remember. I didn't go to the office enough. When I was in Crockett Promotions in Charlotte, I did go to the office more often. Flair was there all the time. Maybe that's why he was 17 times world champion. So I didn't do enough politicking.
So
that was my fault.
Flair and Hogan very similar that way with the behind the scenes ability to.
Yeah, they got Vince's.
Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Tony Alice is a good friend of the show, and Tony was telling me one time over dinner that I don't know how true this is that Vince sent you after him in a real match and told you to shoot on him. Is that a true story?
Tony said that?
He said that, yeah.
Tony might have had a few, but that's okay. What do you think?
Oh, Christ.
He said like you literally like beat the shit out of him or something during a match.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Okay, was that when he was Saba Simba?
Yes. And Vince wanted to get rid of the character, and they sent you out to finish the job.
No. You know what, though? That's not true. But I did get mad at Tony in the ring because I said, what the fuck kind of gimmick is that? And he wasn't selling nothing for me. And so I just started hitting him. Bam, bam. I was pissed.
The Saba Simba thing.
This match sucked. And Saba Simba said, what the fuck am I even doing out here? And I was half-assed babyface then anyway. I was making my turn.
Okay.
And I was in a bad mood. And Tony, you know, Tony could probably just knock me out anyway because he's got those big fucking arms.
Yeah.
And he's such a nice guy. But we were hitting each other really hard. And I just got fed up with it. But the finish was a fucked up finish where I held him. And Jimmy got the guitar or something. I still had a guitar for some reason. Jimmy brought it out or something and went to hit Tony over the head with a guitar, but he hit me instead. So then I did my baby face turn kind of then. Saba Simba left, and then I'm like, I'm going to hit you, Jimmy Hart, and the people popped on that. So that being said, I can see why Tony thought Vince told me to go. But you know what? I could never beat up Tony Lat. Look at that fucking guy. How are you going to beat that up? That's like trying to beat up Mike Tyson.
You ain't kidding. Man.
Christ. You know?
And he still got the guns. It's ridiculous.
But you know what? The match, I was so disgusted in the match that maybe I was throwing one too many potatoes. But he was throwing them back at me, you know? Potato, you know what?
Yeah. Right? Oh, sure.
So I could see why he might have thought that I was gunning for him.
Craig,
you know,
I don't know.
I would pick a lot smaller guy than that.
I know nothing about nothing, but I was totally surprised. I did not know that you were married to Medusa Miceli.
No, never. You, I wasn't married.
Okay, so where did I hear that from?
I don't know. It's bullshit. She was down. I guess she stayed with me about 2 years.
Oh, so you were dating then?
Yeah, that was it. She moved in with me, and then she moved out. So.
How was, like, she's a very A personality, at least from what I see on interviews. So was that hard, like, a hard relationship to deal with?
What do you mean by A personality?
Like, very, like...
outgoing? Outspoken?
Very...
intense?
You know, very I'm-the-boss type of person, it seemed like, right? It's like when you see her...
alpha female?
At any interview
you
see with...
that's probably why we didn't get along, because...
okay. You know, okay.
I was a quiet person, and...
But the TV dinners were on the wrong side of the fridge or something? Put them on the other side?
I don't know how we got along. You know, I took her on the road with me when we went to Europe and different places like that, so I guess around the wrestling business it was okay, but just having... She came into my house and it just didn't work out. You know, it wasn't a good fix, and I should have never done that. And it actually pissed me off when I think about it, because it was a bad scene. But thankfully, I met the love of my wife, Julie, and I was with Julie before Medusa, and then me and Julie got back together and got married, and 26 years now we're still together. So, it was a wild time of my life, and that's why we didn't get along, you know.
Any particular opponent you had in your career that was a high profile, one of your legendary feuds perhaps, was anybody really hard to work with, or that you felt you had, I got to carry him?
I was fortunate to usually be programmed with, you know, like Ronnie Garvin was great, and Piper was great, and Tito was great, Morocco, I worked with Morocco some.
How about JYD?
JYD only had two matches with him.
Mm-hmm.
He was hard to work with.
Okay.
But he was so over with the people. There's a lot of guys, you know, Steamboat had great matches with him. There's a lot of guys, and my dad taught me, you know, there's some guys you just have to learn how to work around them, especially if you're the champ. So you can just take your time and go out there and circle your opponent, and then, you know, just basic, like the Ultimate Warrior when I worked in him. I would just let him run back and forth till he got tired himself out, and then I'd work with him, but I couldn't work my style with him. There was a lot of guys like that. But you just had to work. You had to fake it through and work it out. And eventually they'll come around to you, you know.
What percentage works for you? And being an old school wrestler with a famous father, watching WrestleMania become a thing that's now the Super Bowl. Obviously, Vince McMahon Jr. always felt entertainment is the bigger factor in his presentation. What's the percentage for you that you feel is acceptable between wrestling and entertainment? Has it gone too far over the years, or is there, you know, how would you like to see it broken down? How much of a percentage would be wrestling and how much would be entertainment, considering you saw both over all these years?
Well, that's a hard question. You know, the WrestleManias do good all the time. And first of all, I think there's too much. There's too much wrestling on TV. Mm. Too much, you know.
Mm. Yeah.
And they got it. What's it on? Four nights a week.
It's nonstop.
It really is nonstop.
3 hours one night, 3 hours another night, and then they got the NXT, and then you got AEWs on twice a week.
Then there's TNA and the rest of the other little ones.
Yep. I think there's too much wrestling. People got to be hungry to watch it. I like it in the old days where you had Saturday night's main event when on NBC was a big thing once a month. You had TV in the daytime or whatever, and you push the shows, or WOR midnight on Saturday nights forever was here. It's just too much wrestling, and I think because of that, they run out of ideas to try to make everything look new, and they go, oh, God, you know, I mean, it's just too, I don't know how they do it.
I don't know
how they can keep up. That's why it's lost its credibility, because there's too much fucking wrestling, you know?
What was your feeling? Like, holy shit, I'm on NBC. I can't, like, who would have ever thought I was going to be on NBC?
No, that was a great feeling, being on NBC. You know, Saturday night's main event once a month. That was great. And we had some great, me and Brutus, I remember being on there a lot. We had some great matches with the Bulldogs. And that's such a good era. And everything, see, back, everything was so brand new and innovative, and we're coming out with this and that. Nowadays, what the hell are they going to give us for new? You know, what's going to be new? It's like the 60s and 70s music. That was, and even the 50s, I'll go back that far. That's a mainstay of music. That's where it started. Now you listen to the shit nowadays, what the hell are we listening to? I mean, they can't follow their own act. Mm. And so that's what's wrong with wrestling. They should just shut it down for 6 months. Ooh. Shut it down like they do baseball and football. Just shut it down and bring it back. That's what I would do.
Seasonal wrestling?
Oh. Well, no, just shut it down for 6 months.
Make people hungry for it.
Yeah. When is it going to come back on?
We were just saying the other day.
Yeah. I can see that.
You know, growing up, Channel 9. Could not wait for Channel 9 at midnight.
There was 6 days in between to salivate.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Greg, tell me a little bit about your father.
Okay.
You know, tell me what kind of man he was and what kind of relationship you had with him.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I never grew up with my father. I grew up with my grandparents. And my mother and my dad, they broke up. So I lived with my mother. My dad, she didn't want him to wrestle. So he went out wrestling, and eventually they got divorced. And then I lived with my mother, and my grandparents were right down the street. I would just run to my grandparents all the time. So she let me stay with her grandparents, and I had kind of a wild mother. I'm sorry. She was a nightclub singer and everything, and she would bring different guys home, and it just didn't work out. So I grew up, my grandparents actually adopted me, and I grew up in a small town close to Seattle, Washington, and she's not living right now, and God bless her. But she went to L.A. and met a guy down there and had a nice life, and and I used to go visit her all the time. So, that being said, around when I was about 17 years old or something, my aunt Virgie, she lived in Seattle, and she said, "Here, I want you." I'd never talked to my dad. I never even saw him, and I talked to him on the phone. And I was about 17, and he ended up flying me down to Dallas. He was a Texas heavyweight champion then. And I ended up staying down there 4 months with him on the road. What a wild time. And of course, right away, I idolized him. And I'm about 5'10". I'm not full grown yet. About 190 pounds, but I'm pretty stocky. And he took me on the trips. And I think I finally said, "I want to be a wrestler like you." And he goes, "No, you're going to go back to Seattle. You're going to go to college," because I was just starting to go to college. I actually wanted to be I was such a big music fan, I wanted to be in radio, a disc jockey or something like that. I wanted to be, or a newsman or anything. I was into radio. And so he says, "Well, I'll tell you what." He says, "I'll send you to Calgary." And I'm thinking, he's going to send me to Stu Hart. It's 40 degrees below zero up there. And he sent me up there with no wrestling shoes. And I'm going to get discouraged and I won't want to wrestle. But I learned really good up there with Stu, and it was really, really hard. And I got some horrible infection on my feet. And I couldn't wrestle I was laid up for 2 weeks. I had impetigo with the feet. Mm. It was dirty mat.
Mm.
And I finally got me some shoes. And I learned how to wrestle some, and then I stayed in touch with my dad, and I said, "You got to get me out of here. I can't take it anymore. I'm making $50 a week, and I'm staying at the Calgarian Hotel, downtown Calgary, and they got three channels on the TV, and two of them are French. I said, I got to get out of here. Help me, please." So he sent me to Detroit. Eddie Farhat, Detroit. He was the original Sheik. So I went there and stayed at the Sheik's house in the basement. And he had his kid down there too, I remember. And he had a ring in the back. And I'd already been wrestling in front of people, right? So he just put me on a road. I never learned anything out there in that ring in the back, you know. I learned just going in there and winging it with hardly any preparation. Stu Hart didn't really teach me hardly anything. He taught me how to hook up and how to fall backwards, and that's it. You know,
and how to get a foot infection.
And throw that sidearm punch, which I never used, and grab a headlock, just the bare basics. He used to take all the other guys and take them down and wrench them and wring them and break their arm or something. He didn't do that because I'm Johnny Valentine's son. Thank you, Stu. He's another one that's passed away. But, you know, I remember Brett used to sneak down and watch. But I really learned it from just going out there and doing it from scratch. Mm. Just going out there not knowing what the hell I'm doing. But along came a guy named Don Fargo. Don Fargo saw me, and one of the Fargo brothers, but he was by himself then. He had the blonde hair. He did the strut like Buddy Rogers. And he asked Sheik he named me Johnny Fargo, and we went to Buffalo, New York together. And I learned really how to work from him in tag matches. And we went to Texas together and back to Buffalo again. And then finally I went on my own. So my dad, I never used the name Valentine until he went down in a plane crash. And so I became Greg Valentine. And so the rest is history there.
How long into it did it take your father to give you his blessing? Because, you know, on the surface, when a fan, like such as us, hears that the first place you go is the dungeon, and the next place you go is the Sheik, the original Sheik, he must have been impressed that you survived these things. And at some point, did he say, okay? Because at first you said he told you no, so.
Yeah, so I think what changed his mind So I didn't want to be a Fargo anymore. I says, can I just use the name Greg Valentine? And he says, yeah, but go as my brother, not my son. Because back in the day, you know, they're going to say, well, he's 40, 45 years old. He's too old. You know, everybody back in that day, back then, you know, if you're over 50 or something, you were told to be a boxer or a wrestler, people thought. And I understood his feeling. So I went as his younger brother, Greg Valentine. But when he had the plane crash, then it was different. Then I became his son. Mm. But yeah, I got over as Greg Valentine, his brother, and went out to LA as Greg Valentine. And, you know, so, you know, it all worked. But he had that horrible plane crash, crippled him from the waist down. And but he managed to live another 20 years. And he would never be in that wheelchair. He wanted to walk around with those crutches, those metal crutches. And so, you know, God bless my dad. Mm.
Your relationship with Andre the Giant, how did you get along with Andre?
Wonderful. I loved Andre the Giant.
Feel fortunate that he loved you back? Because I've heard that if Andre didn't like somebody, oh boy.
Oh, so in 1975, I'm working for Mike LaBelle in L.A., and they sent me to Japan. I got on this big 747, and it's empty, and I'm in the back, and this stewardess comes to me. She comes back to me in the back, says, there's a couple guys up in first class. They want you to come up there. So I go on this big 747, and they had that spiral staircase that goes up to the first class on this big 747, and there is Andre sitting. And they're playing cribbies and Arnold Skolin. So I'm hanging out with him. And, of course, Arnold knew my dad. And Andre had worked with my dad. So they invited me up there. And I'm drinking cognac. And I don't know how to play cribbies, but I'm just glad to be up there. And I was shit-faced when I went through Japanese customs. But for the next 3 weeks, Arnold went back home early. So it was just me and the Giant for 3 weeks. Going out every night to these Korean barbecues. I love the guy. There was a story I tell a lot where we're trying to get a cab, and they see Andre, how big he is, and nobody will stop. So I says, hide behind there, Andre, and I'll flag a cab down, and I'll, as soon as the cab gets here, and then you come around. So he come around, and the Japanese cab driver go, no, and he'd get in the car to take off, and Andre reached down and grabbed the cab and pulled it up, and the wheels are spinning like anywhere. This. It's like something out of a cartoon.
Wow.
The guy gets off and runs. So we finally got a panel truck. But we got back to the Kiel Plaza, very nice hotel there too. So me and Andre became great friends. Ever since that, I would be in the front part of this bullet train, and he'd yell at me, and I'd turn around, and he's way in the back. And all the Japanese people would look, too. You know, they all look, in unison. And Andre backs his big ass up against the aluminum back there and lets this big, giant fart, boom. And they all turn and look like this, and they look like this, and they all start laughing. Then he did another one. I had so much fun with Andre.
That's unbelievable.
I loved Andre.
So, Sims, come on in. Tell the fans where you're going to be. Sit right next to Greg, if you don't mind. While he's getting settled, Greg, what were your thoughts on Adrian Adonis?
Oh, that was a mental case there, too. I knew Adrian in Buffalo when I was working as Johnny Fargo. And nice guy, and he came up, and he was really a tough guy down deep. He knew how to wrestle. This Fred Atkins guy up in Buffalo there taught him how to work and taught him how to be tough. But he went goofy, you know. It was the drugs and that stupid gay gimmick he had, you know. He actually, we were friends, and one time he told me to get away from him. He said, what are you talking to me for? I said, well, fuck you, you know, so I won't talk to you anymore. It wasn't long after that where he went off the deep end. So. Yeah. I don't think too much about him.
Understood. Eric, where are you going to be the rest of the weekend?
All right, so tomorrow from 9 to about 4 o'clock or so, we're in New York City, the Big Apple. It's the Big Apple trading card. It's the Big Apple Con tomorrow at the It's the Big Apple trading card. Whatever, it's the Big Apple Con, the New Yorker Hotel, and that's over by Madison Square Garden. And we're going to be there
over by the garden.
And then Sunday, we go up to Albany, New York, and we got Heroes Hideout Colony Center Mall. We'll be there from 11 to about 2, and you know, come check us out over at Colony Center Mall up near Albany Airport up there. So if you're up in that neck of the woods and you're listening to us, thank you so much, and come visit us. Those are the two live and in-person appearances for Greg the Hammer Valentine. And also you can catch him on the virtuals, Facebook Live. He's going to be with T-Mart Promotions tomorrow night and Sunday night with Captain's Corner. So if you want Greg Valentine, he's all over for this weekend with ESS.
Greg, it's got to make you feel great that all these fans still adore you after all this time and recognize you being one of the greatest at your profession of all time.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of that is because they're, even if they were too young to watch me back then, some of these younger guys that are watching the shit that's on TV now, but they go back and look at the 80s, the 70s, 80s, 90s stuff, and they realize, oh, wow, it's a whole new thing here to me. It really looked good back then. So they're reading, because of YouTube and because of everything else, and the Peacock Network replaying the WWE stuff, it gave me new life. And it's not like, it's kind of like I'm still wrestling, but I'm not. I mean, they're seeing the stuff that I did 20 years ago and they're appreciating it, or maybe longer, I don't know. But it's good to be appreciated still.
Well, we appreciate you and so do all the fans, and thank you again for all you've done.
Yeah.
We're going to hit you with something called the Farrow's Final Question, and we're going to get you out of here. This is where Jimmy Farrow comes off script, and he just decides to ask you whatever is on the top of his head. So, Jimmy, you got it.
All right, Hammer. I'm going to ask you this as we're going to make you a fan, like you were before you ever started. What is the fan Greg Valentine's dream match? You got one match you can watch. Who's your dream match as a fan?
Okay.
Could be any time period. Go back to Gorgeous George if you want.
It would be Johnny Valentine against Wahoo McDaniel.
Mm. Oh, wow.
I saw that in Texas. Or Johnny Valentine against Prince Von Erich when he knocked Prince's teeth out. Those matches were so realistic, and they were like this far from not being realistic.
Nice.
Oh, my God. So Johnny Valentine against Wahoo, I would say that, those two.
It's perfect.
That's a great match.
It's perfect.
Yeah. With that,
we have some breaking news here.
Go ahead.
Breaking news.
By the way, one of the fans says you look like John Minko from WFAN. I don't know
who that is, but that's okay.
You don't know the Mink? Jeez, go on.
Greg Valentine may have one more match in him.
Really?
Exclusively on the Monty and the Farrow.
Just don't wrestle Flair. He's done.
Hammer Valentine is going to announce who he wants to fight right now.
Well, maybe Flair, though.
The floor is yours.
Vince McMahon.
No.
Ric Flair.
Redeem Flair.
He wants to slap the shit out of Ric Flair.
Yeah. Wow. No, yep. So, long time ago, I broke Ric Flair's nose with Gene Anderson's cane, and I broke it for real. Mm. So I want to break his nose again.
Nice.
Well, I'd buy a ticket to see that.
That I would too.
Without a doubt. Thank you.
It'd be a lot better than Jeff Jarrett again.
Let me ask you a question because you guys are wrestling fans. Who's the better performer, Greg the Hammer Valentine or Ric Flair?
Well, you're talking about performer now. Believe
we're talking now. Past what?
I know who I'd rather watch. He's sitting right there.
Let's go into primes.
Here's a perfect example because we were talking about Backlund. This proves it right here. Backlund and then Morales. To make a transition from 1 month to the next month and have
a great match like he did, without a doubt, it's Greg Valentine. Greg Valentine is one of the greatest because he could work with every wrestler. Yeah. Let's not forget, he worked with Backlund and then ends up working with Hogan. You can't get...
And Jay Strongbow.
I mean, Jay Strongbow.
I mean, that's the exact opposite.
JYD. You know,
that was JYD.
Absolutely.
But it's all about working around those people to bring them to you. But, you know, there was still... I had some good matches, good people to work with, so...
The greatest villain of all time, in my opinion. And a changeling.
Here's my question, Greg. Let's see if you knew this. Did you know that Eric Sims at one point was a professional wrestler?
What? You what?
Yeah, he did a gay gimmick, didn't he?
A gay gimmick?
He told me that today,
and I never realized
Do you know what his name was?
Captain Kosher?
It's close. Do you know what his name was?
You know, I'm glad that he told me that because he knows how hard it is to get in a ring. Mm. He tried it, and so that's why he respects it.
Yeah. Well,
I wasn't tough.
And what was your name there?
What was your name?
The Jewish Ninja.
I wasn't that far off.
Very good. I told you it would be good.
I did a martial art gimmick.
With that, thank you again, Mr. Valentine.
Thank you, guys.
What an honor you joined the show. Farrow, send us out.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us.
Yes,
absolutely. Thanks, folks. You've been watching Monty and the Pharaoh. And until next Thursday at 9 p.m., live from Indie Music TV, right here in Long Island, Ronkonkoma. Later.